Through a very difficult year with the coronavirus and what it has done to people and businesses and families and churches. And we have just come through a very difficult week with all of the political turmoil that took place and all of the disturbing images that we saw on the television. And for those of you who are not familiar with our church, I am not trying to be political here. We probably have, even in our auditorium today, people on both sides of the political spectrum. People who thought what happened in Washington was great, and people who thought what happened in Washington was condemnable. And so I'm not trying to be political. As a pastor, you often find as a pastor you have to walk a fine line. Not to offend people on the right, not to offend people on the left. But for some of you, the difficulties of the last year and even of the last week haven't stopped there because you are dealing with your own personal difficulties. I think of the Zimmerman family this morning who had a death in their family this week. Some are dealing with sickness. Some are dealing with death. Some are dealing with financial issues. Some are dealing with relationships that have gone bad. And sometimes, as I said before my prayer, the difficulties and the stresses of life occupy our minds to the extent that they block everything else out. Sometimes we get so caught up in the problems of life and all that we're going through that we lose sight of what's really important in life, and that is the spiritual dimension of life. The problem for so many Christians is that in the turmoil of what we live in, we lose sight of the spiritual dimension. We lose sight of the spiritual battle that is taking place and the attacks that take place on our spiritual lives every day. It's not that we don't care. It's just that we are so preoccupied with life that we don't see. In his first epistle, the Apostle Peter referred to our adversary, the devil. You have an adversary. You have an enemy who is out to make your spiritual life as ineffective as possible. And can I tell you, and this is an opinion, okay? You can take that and $2 and get yourself a cup of coffee. I think that Satan has used the political drama in our country to sidetrack us as Christians, to get our hearts and our minds so preoccupied with what's going on politically, whether you agree with it, you like it, whatever side you fall on, it doesn't matter. We all get so preoccupied that we're no spiritual good. Excuse me. Satan wants to make you ineffective as a Christian. He wants you to be a spiritual wimp, a spiritual washout. And he will do whatever he can to make you a spiritual weakling. Would you give me a cup of water, please? Sometimes we miss out on what Satan is doing until it's too late. And one of the most effective things that Satan uses in our lives is temptation. That's the area that we're looking at in these first weeks of 2021. We're calling this series Roadblocks and Pitfalls, because that's what temptations are. They are roadblocks that stop us from being as spiritually effective as we could be, and they are pitfalls that drag us down and trap us in a life that hinders our walk with God. I think that this is a great subject to talk about at the beginning of a new year. Thank you. Excuse me. Because if we can get a handle on temptations in our lives and learn how to handle them, we are going to be much more effective for God in this year than we were in the past year. And your walk with God, if you can get a handle on how to handle temptations, is going to be so much stronger. It's going to be so much more beneficial for you and for those around you. Now, last Sunday, I made two observations about temptations. Let me just review this very quickly. The first is we don't give temptations enough credit. We tend to think that, well, temptations are not really a problem for me, and we excuse our behavior. Just to give you an idea of how important temptation is, remember that when Satan tried to attack Jesus, this was the area he chose, the area of temptation. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that your temptations are not really that significant, they're not really that important. Satan will destroy you with temptation. The second observation I made was temptations will cause you to act in ways that are contrary to your Christian values. Every temptation is a potential roadblock in your Christian life. Every temptation is a potential pitfall for you. And if you give in to temptation, you will begin to act in ways that are contrary to everything you believe, everything you profess, everything that you hold dear in your faith. We are all susceptible to temptation, and we need to take this seriously. Can I tell you, if the temptation is in the right area for you and the benefits are great enough for you, you will give in. Last Sunday, I gave you three things to think about in this area of temptation. Everyone faces it, expect it, and prepare for it. All of us face temptation. If you are battling some temptation today that you are struggling with and you think you cannot resist it, you are not alone. We've all been there. Don't give up. Expect it. Jesus told his disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane to watch and pray so they didn't fall into temptation. What he was saying was, expect it. It will come. You need to be ready. None of us are immune from temptation. And that leads us to the third area, prepare for it. You need to be prepared to fight temptation. And that's really where I want to go now today with a message that we're calling There's Always a Way Out. There's always a way out. And I want to give you first a general truth about this, and then I want to give you a specific truth about this. So let's start with the general truth. Then the general truth is there is always a way out of temptation. Let's go back to that familiar verse that we looked at last Sunday in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, where the Apostle Paul, writing to the believers in the city of Corinth, says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man." That is, we all face it. Nothing unique about you. Nothing unique about your temptation. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, the word temptation that's used in this verse actually has two different meanings. It can mean a temptation, as we understand that word, a solicitation to sin, to do evil. It can also mean simply a trial in your life. The idea of a trial is something more general. A trial is not necessarily sinful, whereas a temptation, if you give in to it, is sinful. Most translations of the Bible, and I checked any number of them this week, have translated this verse with the word temptation. There are some, and there are some scholars and commentators who say, no, this should be understood by the word trial, not necessarily something sinful. But I believe that the word temptation is the most accurate rendering of this word. The context of the passage from verse 1 in chapter 10, following through even after verse 13, supports the idea of temptation, a solicitation to sin. Verse 12, the preceding verse warns us, let him who thinks he takes heed, thinks he stand, take heed lest he fall. It's warning us not to think that we can stand on our own in the face of temptation, which the previous 11 verses had talked about and used Israel as the great example. And so the idea of temptation fits better with verse 12. And the fact that the Bible talks about trials and says that God even brings trials into our lives, as he did with Abraham. The writer of Hebrews writes, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. Who brought that testing or that trial into Abraham's life? God did. Now, 1 Corinthians 10:13 is talking about escaping from something that is detrimental to our lives, not something God is doing in our lives. So I believe the normal understanding here in the context and in the fact that God brings trials into our lives, that the word here is better translated and understood as temptation or a solicitation to sin. Now, last Sunday, we emphasized a particular truth from this verse, and that was the truth that temptation affects all of us. It is common to man. Today, I want to emphasize another truth from this verse, and that is that there is a way out of temptation. The verse says that God will make the way of escape. Now, let me say something that may be very obvious, but I think it needs to be stated so that we're all clear on this at the very beginning. To be tempted is not a sin. Jesus was tempted. He did not sin. Hebrews 4:15 says, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. It is not a sin to be tempted. The sin is giving in to temptation. Now, for every temptation, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10:13, there will always be a way out. That's the general truth that I want you to get this morning. There is always a way out of temptation. You do not have to give in. You do not have to sin. When you are tempted, you cannot say, I couldn't help it. It was too powerful for me. There was nothing I could do about it. It's just not true. Now, the general truth then leads us to a question. And the question is, what is the way out of my temptation? It's great to say that there is a way out of a temptation so I don't sin, but I haven't found my way out. That temptation keeps coming back to me over and over and over again until eventually I give in and I sin. I haven't been able to find my way out. Notice that 1 Corinthians 10:13 never says God will remove your temptation. It says that God will not allow you to be tempted beyond your ability to handle it. You cannot say that temptation was too much for me. God does not protect you always. Now, he may at times, but God does not always protect you from temptation, but he always protects you from the power of temptation. On a scale of 1 to 10, you might be able to handle a temptation to the power of 9, where another person would only be able to withstand that temptation to a power of 3. God knows your limits, and he will not allow you to face a temptation that is beyond your ability to handle it. There's always a way out for you. Not only then is there a general truth, but I want to look secondly at the specific truth. And the specific truth is that there are ways to handle temptation. You see, God has provided strategies for us. And this is where I think we fail when we say, I've been tempted over and over and over again, and I just cannot fight this temptation any longer. I can't help it that I give in. We are failing to understand that God has given us some specific strategies, some specific ways to handle temptation. Now, not every temptation is handled in the same way. And in fact, the same temptation might be handled in your life one way at one point in your life and another way at another point in your life. But let me give you this morning 4 strategies that God has given us for handling temptations. And the first strategy is submission and resistance. Submission and resistance. In James chapter 4, the Apostle James writes, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Now, this verse in the book of James and in chapter 4 is in the context of giving in to sin. And he talks about people there who profess to be Christians, but they're living a sinful life. Later in verse 8, the next verse after this, he tells them they're to cleanse their hands from sin, they're to purify their hearts, they're to lament over sin. That's what any Christian should do whenever they give in to sin. Now, right in the middle of this larger section in James 4, he tells us how to get Satan off your back. And as you can see from this verse, there are 2 parts to this strategy: submission and resistance. And they are given in that order for a particular reason. Submission means to put yourself under the authority of God, to give him your loyalty, to give him your allegiance, is to recognize his sovereignty over you. He is to have control of your life in every area. That's what submission is. Resistance means we are to oppose the devil. It's actually a command here. As those who have submitted to God, our duty, our responsibility, what God expects of us is to resist the devil. Let me give you a simple illustration. When a nation, such as happened, let's say, to France in World War II, is conquered by another nation, there are generally 2 groups of people in that conquered nation. There are those who accept the fact that they are now a conquered people. They may not like it, they may not accept it, but they admit we have been conquered. Then there are those who don't accept it, and they fight against it. That second group is called the resistance. They actively oppose the enemy. And that is what we are called to do as Christians. We are called to actively oppose the enemy of our soul. We are to be the resistance. The reason that this strategy is given in this particular order, first, submit to God, secondly, resist the devil, is because you cannot be the resistance if you have not first submitted to the king. The greatest attribute of a resistance fighter is not the fact that they are sharpshooters. It is not their bravery. It is not their talent. The greatest attribute of a resistance fighter is their loyalty to their nation. And until you have submitted to God as your king, you will not be an effective resistance fighter against the devil.